Right, well, good morning, everybody. And as always, we're delighted so many of you can make the time to listen to our full year results. The results for the 12 months to the end of April, including 10 months of the SCA acquisition, which has obviously been sort of the dominant feature of the last year. So welcome. Health and safety is an important, a fundamental part of how you run the company. And you can see all the fire exits are highlighted, basically straight out the door. But we aren't anticipating an alarm. So as usual, if you hear the alarm go off, follow me out. I love that joke. So here we are for the full year. And as always, I'm joined by Steve Dryden, our finance director. I'll take you through an introduction. Steve will come on to the financial numbers. We'll then talk about the business afterwards with myself, and then we'll have a Q&A, and we're joined by some people on the telephones. So the results for the year. You've read them. We're pleased. We're pleased with the EPS being up 36%. The dividend, in line with our policy, with a cover of 2.2, is up 36%, but the return on capital, our primary measure, 12.3, which is up on a pro forma basis. What this is telling us is our model is working. In a low growth, challenging environment, the model's working. And what a year. Because we have made substantial progress on operational, financial, but the strategic progress that we've made is of particular note. It's not about just being bigger. You've got to be better. You've got to earn the right to be a large company. And we very much believe we've improved our performance for all of our stakeholders. Our stakeholders of employees, of customers, the environment, because that's what builds sustainable returns for shareholders. So we're not just bigger, we're better as well. And that stronger business model is a platform for further growth. Not because we want it, just because we want it, it's because our stakeholders want it. A platform for further growth.
Thank you, Miles. I'm Steve Dryden. I'm the Group Finance Director of DS Smith. Really, what you see here is another year of consistent value creation. So free cash flow, 270 million. It's a 186% increase. And what you'll see there in terms of the working capital slide later, significant inflow from working capital. It's important to note we've worked really hard to get cash out of the business that we acquired. And you'll see there coming out of the SCA packaging business, but also out of the DS Smith business. Balance sheet strengthened. We said we'd get net debt down below 2. That's our medium-term target. We got there a year earlier than when we announced the acquisition. Margins, 6.8%. 20 basis points up on the pro forma. When we say pro forma, we're making reference to a prospectus that we issued where we showed you the SCA packaging numbers. But pro forma number would be 6.6% for last year, with 20 basis points up. If you look behind that a little bit, you see that we've continued to improve in packaging. And paper, as we expected almost a year ago, has been weak. Return on average capital employed, now if you remember, that is our most important measure for this business. The pro forma, on the same basis as the return on sales, is 12%. We've delivered 12.3%. If you remember, our medium-term target is 12 to 15%, so we're just inside that, albeit at the lower range. It's still well ahead of our cost of capital at 9.5%. The dividends, full-year dividend up 36%. The board's got a very clear dividend policy. Dividend cover last time was 2.2 times, this time is 2.2 times. So financial highlights. Yes, the revenue and profits up, but I'll show you that later on a bridge so you can see the different drivers in there. Return on sales, pro forma is really up 20 basis points. Adjusted earnings up 74%. And it's important that you realise the actual cash quantum of the earnings is up 74%, but because we completed on the FCA packaging acquisition at the end of June 2012, we actually had 2 months of dilution. So we had the shares out there following the rights issue, but no earnings coming from the acquisition. That's why you have that difference between earnings, adjusted earnings of 74% and adjusted earnings per share of 76%. Asset turnover fell slightly to 1.8 times. Again, that's the first year of having a large acquisition in. But return on average capital employed, 12.3%. There's a lot on this slide. I'll just pick out the key points. Obviously, finance costs up following the drawdown of the funds to support the acquisition. The income tax, we've guided to a 24% income tax charge, and we're at 23.6%. Amortization, you'll find hopefully a slide at the back in the appendices just takes you through how we're amortizing the different parts of the intangibles and over what period. FCA acquisition costs, net of tax, as you know, we completed at the end of June, so that's predominantly the cost of drawing down the debt to fund the acquisition. The integration costs, again, there's a slide there, but that's integral to deliver the synergies, and you'll see in the appendix where we try to match up for you where the synergies are coming from and where the integration costs are against that. There's some other exceptional items at 6.7. It's a combination of the final tranche of the disposal proceeds and spices, offset by one or two factory closures, so as we address one or two loss-making plants and continue to make ourselves more efficient. So, as I promised, the revenue bridge, in the same format I hope they're used to, where last year we were a $2 billion revenue company. This year we're reporting at $3.7 billion revenue. You can see there the impact of 10 months of FCA packaging, that's $1.8 billion. Our selling prices came off, and I'll show you how those related to costs in a moment, but the selling prices reduced by $68 million. We continued to grow in packaging, so that packaging volume growth contributed £13 million to our revenue line. Paper, we've flagged in various IMSs how challenging paper is, so revenue there was off by $29 million. Finally, foreign exchange translation, predominantly with the euro, reduced our revenue by $39 million. A similar basis, the operating profit bridge. So again, last year we were at $142 million, bridging to this year's reported $251 million. So you can see the impact there of 10 months of FCA packaging at $102 million. The impact of selling prices falling, $68 million, offset by lower cost, $56 million. It's quite interesting to think about how that progressed through the year. So certainly at the earlier part of the year, we had falling selling prices as our input costs fell. At the back end of the year, costs started to rise, and so then selling prices start to move. And it's important that you appreciate legacy DS Smith on a 3-month cost recovery, as we've explained. FCA packaging, that's on 6 months. And one of the things we want to be doing over time, part of the integration, is bringing that 6-month cost recovery down to 3 months. The volume growth on corrugators is plus $6 million, and there's paper, minus $16 million. So that's exactly what we said a year ago. We expected paper and a whole to drop to be a break-even business, and that's what's happened. Finally, synergies at $33 million of benefit, or €40 million. It's quite interesting. To track an acquisition, we've put all these FCA packaging site businesses into individual profit centres. And we can track in huge detail what costs, what synergies against those. The reality is, as you integrate a business, as we did on day one, we've moved volumes and business between different sites. So, for instance, we've got a DS Smith site in France, where we've transferred business to a former FCA packaging site, business in Germany. It's very hard to track that. So I show the synergies and the FCA performance with huge preciseness from the financial systems. The reality is we started to integrate and put these businesses together from day one. Regional performance. Square Inch of here, all of our regions make attractive returns on sales. Where they are below the average is predominantly because they've got a heavy paper component. So the UK got a large facility at Kemsley that drew down the UK's return to 5% return on sales. Similarly, in Central Europe and Italy, there's a large paper mill in Italy that pulled down our return on sales. Finally, plastics has continued to deliver attractive returns, predominantly coming out of the liquid packaging and dispensing business, which continues to make great progress. Free cash flow up 186%. And you can see the huge working capital inflow there. I think the pleasing thing is that's not just from the SCA packaging business that we acquired. It's also from continued improvement within BS Smith. And the other thing is a lot of companies, when they do a large acquisition, stop spending money. We are still continuing to invest in CapEx. And that CapEx, over three quarters of this, has gone into packaging. And if you look at our CapEx number, about 40% of its growth, 15% of it, is for efficiency. So BF Smith is a business that's continuing to invest to support and grow with its customers. So free cash flow, 270.4 million, at 29.2p. You can see there the trend in terms of consistent free cash flow generation over the last 3 years. You see the SCA integration synergies coming through there this year. Working capital. Important. This is the average monthly, so this is the result for each month, all 12 months, divided by revenue. So last year we were at 4.9%. We acquired a business with about 10% working capital. We managed to finish the year with an average monthly working capital level of 4.5%. So a lot of time, a lot of work. I think we've gone after a lot of the easier things, as you'd expect us to prioritise on receivables and with procurement working through on payables. And yet we still started to make some improvement on inventory, with the inventory days falling to 23.7. It's probably fair to say that inventory is probably the one area that's the hardest, because it goes through procurement, manufacturing, commercial. So that's the area where there's still opportunity for further improvement. Net debt, we started the year with 322 million. See there the net effect of the FCA acquisition, less than disposals, at 1.23 billion. Free cash flow I showed you earlier. And there's the cash costs of both the FCA acquisition and the integration costs, the exceptionals, the dividend returns to our shareholders, and then some foreign exchange translation on the euro-denominated debt there of minus 30. So we finished the year with 817 of net debt. The ratio covenant is 1.97 times EBITDA. That's in line with our medium-term target. A significant amount of cover on the interest cover measurement at 9.7 times. And facilities, we've got facilities of 1.4 billion. Importantly, the next material refinancing for BS Smith is 2016. And these are strategic targets that we've shown you many times, and it's important when you have strategic targets, test yourself about how well you're performing against them. So our volume growth, target to be GDP plus one. If you looked across Europe, you weighted the average where BS Smith revenues are, the GDP fell last year by 0.5%. So we're pleased to show that we grew by 0.6% on our box volumes. There's an interesting mix there. DS Smith continued to grow strongly. This is that focus on FMCG. SCA was flat, but encouragingly, recently, the former SCA packaging business has started to show growth again. Return on sales at 6.8%, marginally below the target. You can think in terms of us buying a large acquisition, as the synergies start to phase in, we should be in that 7-9% range. Return on average capital employed at 12.3%, the lower end of that range, but still within that range, 12-15%. Cash conversion's obviously been exceptional this year at 171%. A lot of work getting the working capital benefit out of the SCA packaging acquisition. Net debt to EBITDA, that's in line with our less than 2 times target. What you see here is our synergies split between the cost, the cash, the asset disposals, and we've really achieved more, and we've achieved it faster. So our cost savings were originally 75. When we spoke to you last October, we upgraded that to 100. and we actually have delivered in this financial year 40, and our guidance looking out for the 3 years is 120 million. We expect that second 80 to be delivered 40 and 40. A cash saving, 40 million euros. We've done very well there, 120 million delivered this year, and our guidance in total is now 150 million. And finally, disposal surplus assets. Well, when we announced the transaction, we didn't give any commitment there, but we've actually, our target is to achieve 100 million euros, and in the bank delivered, in terms of this financial year, we've delivered 60 million euros. So we're well on the way there. Our cost to achieve the cost savings has risen to 120 million from the original guidance of 90 million euros. So some guidance for 13-14, or this financial year, just to help you quickly. Our net capex is consistent with what we said before, at 160 million. Depreciation is 130 million. Interest rate is 4.3%. Tax rates in line with guidance at 23%. Amortization charge, again, there's a slide in the appendices to help you there, but it's 50 million. And I know a lot of companies, and I've had a few questions about the IAS 19 pension charge. That would be 10 million, that's up from 5 million this year, and there's a further drag on the operating profit of 2 million. Finally, what, you know, delivering sustainable dividends. So we've got a very clear strategy, and we're implementing it well, and that's giving us, that's helping us reduce the cyclicality in the business. Dividend policy is very clear, 2 to 2.5 times cover, and what you see here is at 2.2 times cover. We've grown the earnings by 36%. Our dividend per share is up 36% to 8 pence. Thank you. I'll pass you to Miles now.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Very clear. So the business review and our strategy. So where are we? Well, I said in the introduction, just about delivering the synergies and being twice the size, it's about do we have a stronger business. Stronger business is more sustainable. And we believe we've built a strong platform for growth. And I'm going to run through each one of our four main stakeholders so you start to understand what underpins our confidence in the future. For employees, one culture aligned to the objectives of the group, so people see the combined strength of the team. The environment in which we're operating in. We talk about our emissions, but it's the way we work with the local communities and the national governments as well. And our customers, in the service, the quality, the innovation to support them going forward. So are you strengthening your business? So first is our shareholder. It's an old slide, but why recreate something which has served us so well? So our financial objectives are to ensure we achieve GDP plus growth. Address the issue of cyclicality that's been so prevalent in industries like ours. Drive the margin, the return on sales to show the resilience of the products that we are selling. But fundamentally, every year to achieve above cost of capital returns. We're very pleased to say that we've done that again. The way we address this is by looking at our business mix. So we have a short paper position. It's a paper position we want to become shorter as we grow our packaging. To minimise the exposure of our shareholders to what is a highly cyclical business that doesn't earn its cost of capital. To grow the recycling business, where we go and collect the old cardboard boxes from every retailer, from the majority of the high street, as expanding that out of UK, into France, into Italy and into Eastern Europe. Fabulous returns and allows us to own the fibre. And then growing the packaging. Growing the packaging business focused on FMCG, which I'll talk more about later. And then how do we differentiate ourselves in the market? How can we really add value compared to our competitors? And we're going to show you how we do that consistently. Efficiency, driving the efficiency of the balance sheet as well as the operational side. Working capital, capital allocation, as well as operating performance. And that culture, what underpins us in such a diverse organisation, different nationalities, different economic regions, how do you bind people together to have one focus that produces the strongest business model? And managing risk. We sold Spices a long time ago. No issues there. Closed the pension fund. No issues there. Bought Otor in France and restructured in France. No issues there. And just now with the SCA packages. Many things have come at the company that we didn't expect. But we had planned for that in looking at the risk that we face in what is an uncertain environment. So to deliver the returns of consistent growth, improved cyclicality, above cost of capital returns, the business mix, how we differentiate, to drive efficiency and manage that risk has been at the centre of our thinking. And let's just look at SCA Packaging, because it has exceeded our expectations. I think the most pleasing thing is the support that we've received from our employees, work councils, unions, as well as our customers. And taking the issue of one team, aligning all the SCA Packaging colleagues with our own. And we're absolutely delighted with how that's happened. And with our customers, they gave us the benefit of the doubt. And we took over a business in SCA that was losing volume. And as Steve said, the volumes in SCA Packaging were flat. DS Smith has grown. But during the year, we turned from a position of negative growth in SCA through a flat position, and now we're starting to see if it improves. As you improve the service, the quality and the innovation, building on the platform to supply across Europe. And the cultural change program in the group, because ultimately this is what shareholders build the returns on. So we did put in a management team on day one. We put in a structure on day one of the acquisition. By midday, the teams were in place and the structures were in place. The processes were in place. And that's delivered for us. We're going to keep that structure because it works very well. We've worked a lot on the culture of the organisation. We've spoken previously about our Own It programme. That you make people, everybody in the company, understand what are our 3 and 5 year objectives. So when you come to work, feel part of building a stronger business and aligning the individual's success with a company's success. So you build aligned interests, personal responsibility and accountability. And the way we've shown the results of this is not just in the synergies that have been achieved. Some of them are difficult to achieve when they involve rationalisation, but no issues there. We've seen it in the health and safety. We have substantially improved the health and safety record of the ex-FDA business. It is a substantial improvement as we've driven that, as well as in DS Smith as well. And in our engagement surveys, just under 90% of all staff responded to our questionnaires, a half-hour questionnaire, telling us what they felt about the company. And we're starting to work on that. So we're building a culture to support the company's interests, which are directly aligned with shareholders. So our first stakeholder is our customers. The second is in the environment. This is an issue for our consumer. It's not just nice to do because of the regulation. The final consumer is asking increasingly about the environmental performance. In some ways, all the recent debate about taxation rates, that's the environment we're working in. Are you a good corporate citizen? And we put out targets for the company. We have significantly improved the CO2, the waste level and the water usage, not only in SCA Smith, but in the SCA businesses as well. driving our, reducing our environmental impact, it's because our final consumer is demanding it. When you buy a product, you consume it, you want to feel that that consumption has the minimum effect on the environment. And we're able to demonstrate this time and time again, working the environment. And with our customers, we look at this in where the opportunities are, and we have a three circles. And I'll go through each of these, but it is the pan-European customers that are very important, as well as all customers, but we see the pan-Europeans being a someone we can offer particular strength to. I'll talk more about why fast-moving consumer goods, why the reasons in Central and Eastern Europe, and more about the innovation. So let's come on to the FMCG customers. Well, the market trends just favour scale players. If you look at the presentations from our major customers, Nestle, Procter, Kraft, Unilever, Reckitt, marvellous world-class companies. They are looking for increasingly common solutions across Europe. They're taking best practice from one part of Europe and applying that throughout all their operations. They're starting to centralise production of particular products and categories in particular regions. Gone are the days you have one factory that does everything. You have one factory for Europe that does a product. So they want to ensure that they can have best practice throughout their supply chain, and that immediately favours a pan-European supplier, of which we are the leader. And why FMCG? Because it's so resilient. Our volumes have never gone down in FMCG. Never. For the last 10 years. We talk about resilience. This is food and drink. That's why we focus on it. That's why we absolutely lead that category. How do you add value in that? It is about innovative packaging, reducing raw materials, the CO2, the cost, the carbon footprint, and I'll talk more about that later. And what does this mean? Nestle is a fabulous customer of ours, yet again, number one supplier. From us, from them, 26 criteria, sustainability, relationship, technical capability, absolutely the number one supplier. And we're delighted to receive it. And let's come into this innovation. I think this has become increasingly important. It is about providing us solutions that our customers, to our customers' problems. And I'll give you a wonderful example later. But just to remind you that we have a European Innovation Centre in Brussels, and on the 6th of September, we're holding a capital markets day there so that investors and advisors can come and actually see firsthand what we mean by solving our customers' problems and how that adds value and how resilient that model is. Behind that, we have three impact innovation centres, building a fourth, a network across Europe where customers come and experience how their products work in the retail environment, how they work in the supermarket, in the express stores, in the hypermarkets. And 17 design centres across Europe. A total design capacity is over 500 people. These are all linked together, sharing design, common solutions for customers in different regions. Steve talked about the efficiency, how we've upgraded our efficiency target. We've spent more on R&D and innovation. Not just in percentage, in absolute terms, the two businesses together who are already strong, we've spent more behind it because we can see such value coming from it. We've continued to roll out things like R-Suit. Now, going in across Europe, we talked about our manual construction before, how we form the box in our customers' factories, improving line speed, reducing energy consumption, how we've licensed that into the US, to Rock 10. D.S. Smith technology that their customers are demanding to be put in place in the US, and now it's going to the Far East as well. Solving a customer's problems, they're looking for it from a global footprint. And let's just look at some of this innovation. Now you can see in the picture down the bottom, you've got a guy on a mobile, like a forklift truck. You can see a product on the a pallet on the on his prongs. Well, here we have our customers who are saying to us, we've got a real problem with this, because as retailers are going to convenience stores, they don't sell so much of one product. They actually sell a little of many products. So when you deliver to them, don't deliver one pallet of one product. You've got to deliver one pallet with lots of different products on it. But the way factories work, you can only lay one layer on a pallet of the same product. So therefore, we need interleaving. You need to have pallets, a product, then another set of interleaving, put another product on top, and another set. And our customers are coming to us and saying, on the left-hand side, this is the way we do it at the moment. We use wooden pallets. Because those wooden pallets have to be lifted, our health and safety record is suffering. We're getting many more injuries from our staff as we construct that. In fact, that pallet, not only is it very difficult to construct, it's also very heavy, and that causes us a lot of problems, because it adds a lot of weight to the lorry. It takes up a lot of space, and it's also extremely expensive, because you're using a wooden pallet to support a product that's actually very light. So what we've introduced is the cardboard pallet. This has been around for a long time, but you can see how well the cardboard pallet, 80% lighter than the wooden pallet, 20% more space on the pallet by using corrugated, and in terms of cost, 25% cheaper. But the way to solve the problem is how these are recycled. And with our recycling arm, we can do that. So this is an example of solving customers' problems, coming away from the old wooden pallet into a corrugated pallet, improving health and safety, improving carbon, improving cost, and it's extremely good news for our shareholders. An innovative solution that we think will increasingly do very well in the future. And just to remind ourselves, we're our customers on plastic packaging. You're seeing another very strong year here. Liquid packaging dispensing, this is bag in box. The transportation of liquids in tins and cans, etc., is very inefficient. The transportation of liquid in cardboard boxes, which are cubes, become increasingly important. We say here we're a strong market position, we're one of the world's leaders. We operate in the US, across Europe and the Far East. It's focused on FMCG. We've opened some new factories in the Far East. The returns are absolutely super, and we believe there are significant further opportunities as the market is fragmented, and our international customer base want the same solutions throughout the world, and they're coming to us to get it. So we've talked about our customers and our employees. I'd just like to build on that last part about FMCG innovation and the region. Because there's a lot of talk about Europe and how it's performing. And this is a map that we've used previously. And if we look at each one of the regions, if we look at the UK for us, the UK's been very stable. It's one of our big profit earners. The market's been stable. Maybe as a bit of a sign of life in the UK economy. Volume's very stable, huge focus on FMCG, very stable, big profit earning region for us, underpinning our results. And in France, number two stroke number one, we bob about a bit here, we're the absolute leaders in FMCG. Over 80% of the business in FMCG, our volumes have never gone down. They continue to grow. This is France with all the publicity it's had. So again, a very stable base. Italy, you've seen the returns Steve has put up there. Another stable position. And we think those three markets will remain stable. We don't think they're going to move ahead significantly. We think they'll be stable for us. But when you come into Central and Eastern Europe, there we see growth. We've only been growing in these regions. And we see further significant growth. When we look at our capital investment program, Steve said by far the majority is in packaging. If you spit it out, not only is it in packaging, the investment's going in Central and Eastern Europe. And that's why we continue to take market share there. So overall, Europe, we've moved from having a stable base and a growing base. We don't have any reason, because of the focus on FMCG, where we're seeing substantial decline, huge erosion, etc. It's been very stable for us, and that's underpinned the results. So the summary. We're delivering. The third year I've sort of stood up here talking about what we're going to do. Which I could say was absolutely outstanding leadership on my behalf, but I'm afraid it's a little bit more to do with the business model work. The strategy works, and we're proving it. The current year has started well, there's no doubt. There are big expectations from us on the group. And we're fully in line with those expectations. The market backdrop is challenging. It's not going to go away. We've assumed growth is really hard to come by across Europe. That's always been our assumption. It's no different. And we are continuing, as always, to see input cost pressures, whether it's from labour or whatever, all being dealt with. But they are there. We've strengthened our customer proposition. And we continue to invest heavily behind that. And the returns we get from that investment are very exciting. Back with more R&D and innovation. We are gaining share, modestly. And we've got further synergies. And those underpin the confidence we have for the future. But most of all, we're excited. We really are excited about what we're building here and about the future. Thank you. A question.
Good morning. Johnny Wellington from JP Morgan. I've got three questions, if I may. Firstly, on pricing, could you just talk about sort of what happened, your box pricing over the last year and sort of how that started for the current year? Secondly, on CapEx, if you could just talk about where you're going to be putting that CapEx in for next year. I think you said in your release you were going to put some capacity into Poland. And then thirdly and finally, on the SCA acquisition, if it's possible to quantify any revenue synergies at this stage. Thank you.
If I take pricing, and then Steve will run through the CapEx. We aim to pass through changing the price of paper. And over the last year, broadly, the price of paper fell and then stayed down. So during the year, that was passed back to our customers. So the price of the box, on average, fell. Just as if the price goes up, we raise prices, and price comes down, we lower prices. And that's why we focus on the volume. So the market is competitive. No doubt about that, it's no change. Prices came down because of the reduction in paper, and we'll have to see where it goes in the future. If the price of paper goes up, then our prices will go up. People say to me, do I expect it to go up? I haven't got a clue. if you ask me about the price of paper, 1 month, 2 months, or 3 months, I simply have no idea whatsoever. It is what it is. People talk about one type of paper going up. No, none of it. It just hasn't happened. So we wait to see, but we're prepared for whatever happens. It goes up, we're recovering it. And your last question about the revenue synergies, we are starting to see much more stability and a much clearer picture on the XFCA business. So on the 6th of September, we'll talk a lot more about this, and I'm sure you wouldn't want me to I'm sure you'd want me to keep my powder dry for that September. But Steve, on the
fundamentally we're investing in packaging. That's how capital allocation works. Recycling is a very low asset intensity business, so most of our investment is going to packaging, and it's frankly making more complex boxes for our customers' needs, making them faster and using less material. The locations where a lot of the investment will be going into, as you said there, Julian, is Poland, that's one of the things we've flagged, and Germany, where we see opportunities to continue to grow. Obviously, we've got great market share in UK, France, Italy, so probably more you see some investments going in there on efficiency, reducing waste, making things faster. So the mix, but fundamentally our capital allocation is towards packaging. Actually, plastics is a subset of within packaging as well.
Thank you very much.
Barry Dixon from Davy. Three questions also, if I could. It's just a follow-on on the paper pricing question. The paper prices went up by 30 or 40 euros a ton or whatever the number was in February or March. Has that now been passed through into box prices, or do you expect to pass that through in the second half of the year? The second question, you mentioned that you're short paper position currently and that you want to become shorter paper. Does that come about through growth in your packaging business, or does it mean that you're going to consider closing one of the existing paper plants, particularly maybe in the context of what's going on in Italy at the moment? And then thirdly, just to clarify, the percentage of your overall business, which is now FMCG, I think you had a target of getting to 75%. Where are you on that journey? Thank you.
Just in terms of paper, there are many different grades of paper, many different types, and you have papers that are sort of what are called craft papers that are made from a new material, and there we've seen virtually no change at all. So if the 30s, I know there's a lot of talk about it, but bits and pieces there. In terms of some of the other papers, indeed, some of them have increased by 20, some 30, some 40. And as these increases come through, there's always a lag as we pass them on. Now, it depends which part of the business. In the XDS Smith business, that tends to happen more quickly, and the XSDA business, that happens more slowly, all due to contract periods. But there is a lag there. That's actually in our results, but the recovery is going according to our expectations. But it's just different as we sort of as we shorten or lengthen prices. Anything could happen in the future. There could be further increases. There could be reduced. We just simply do not know. We have new capacity coming on and coming off. This is why we want a short paper position. And in answer to your question of where we are, we ideally we'd like to be at around about the 50% of our packaging requirements being met from our in-house capability, but hugely long in the recycling. So we collect 3 or 4 times more fibre than we actually use. We produce about half the paper we need, and we think this is the optimum model. Now, at the moment, we are just under 70%, and we're seeing the packaging business grow. We don't have a final solution on the paper that we're ready to announce, but we can certainly see how we can reduce our shareholder exposure to the paper industry in a way that leaves a business that's sustainable in terms of access to the right grades. And again, we'll outline more of that in the we'll outline more of that in the near future. Apologise, your third question was on the
FMCG percentage.
Yeah, we used to be over 70% in DS Smith and would like to get over that. We're now over 60% of the combined, which has been growing that. And again, we'll talk a lot more about that in September. It's just allocating all the right positions. But we are moving ahead, we've grown that, but then we'll outline a lot more in September and where we expect that to get to, because that'll be your target.
Hi there, it's Katrina O'Grady from UBS. A couple of questions. Firstly, on the volume growth, have your pan-European customer volumes been growing ahead of your kind of country-specific or more regional customers? Secondly, could you give a bit more colour on what's been going with the Rock 10 licensing deal, whether that's the same kind of deal that you've now rolled out into other geographies? And finally, on the map that you showed showing your European position, can you just give a little bit of colour on where you think that goes in 3 to 5 years? Are we talking more number ones and twos, or are we talking more deep orange areas?
If I take the first two, and Steve, you have to take them first. In terms of our large customers, when we took over SDA, we knew that we were going to exit some business that was unattractive. It just didn't provide, you know, there's lots of poor volume about. Anybody can get poor volume. It's the return on capital that beats you. So we knew that. Plus we had some overlaps with other parts of the business. And we had a position in SEA that had been in decline. So when we look at the whole year, we've grown despite all of those. But yes, we've exited. Yes, there's an overlap. Yes, we had a decline in position, but the volumes grew. And the reason for that is that the DS Smith business, the legacy, grew really quite strongly. And it grew predominantly in the large FMCG companies. It was significantly ahead of the overall 0.6. When we look at the year, it's sort of coming down, it's stable, and we started to see that FDA business turn around. So when we look at overall, we've done well with the larger customers, despite some exits and despite some overlap. We've done better, and we expect that trend to continue. Not because that's what we want, but that's what they're saying to us.
And then the other one on the Rock 10 licensing.
Yeah. So is that okay?
Oh yeah. Oh,
sorry. On the Rock 10 licensing. DS Smith has technology that allows our large FMCG customers, a very very fast line, to construct the box in their factory at a very very high speed, typically 20 to 30% faster than traditional methods. Not only that, the way the box is formed allows the box to be made of a number of different pieces of card. There's nobody else in the industry anywhere near it. No, nobody near it. So if you go to a company, a large FMCG company, we can say that your line speeds will be faster, reducing your cost. And we use much less fibre in our box as well, because you can construct a box of many pieces very quickly. Such as the strength of the demand for this, some of our large customers wanted US suppliers. They used the same technology, and therefore we've licensed it to Rock 10. It's been licensed then for a number of months. I have to say we're absolutely delighted with how that's been received in the market in the US. It's just a straight licensing company. Our technology, patented, licensed to the second largest supplier in the US, because their customers said we want the DS Smith solution. And we've now also started licensing it out to the Far East, because the customers are saying we want the same solution in Europe, in the US, and in the Far East. There's nobody else who comes in here. Nobody. And we're very pleased. The issue is, how do we now start to really ratchet it up further? Pure licensing.
I think you're looking at slide 30 there. I think there's two parts. There's the pie chart where you can see just how fragmented the competitive environment is there, with 64% held outside the top three. I think one of the attractions with DS Smith for those particularly private individuals there is that when they do wish to sell, I think we offer quite a compelling business model. We're buying them for their customers and their market position, not because to get make them take paper. And they can see how, in terms of the acquisitions we've done, we've grown and developed and built those acquisitions. So I think from a seller, DS Smith is quite interesting. From a shareholder perspective, I think you'll see DS Smith don't overpay, they integrate well, and hence there's the attractive returns coming through the shareholders. In terms of geographies, in terms of where we've got strong market share, UK, France, Italy, number one and number two positions in Northern Europe, you'd probably like to see quite small niche bolt-ons. And the larger opportunities are clearly in Eastern Europe and Germany, where we've got a good footprint to start with, and the opportunity to grow. And it's not just by acquisition, it's also organically. Back to some of the earlier question about the CapEx, that's where some of the CapEx is going. You can see we can take some of the products that Mark was talking about there and sell it to customers across some of the markets in Germany and across Eastern Europe. So a mix of organic and acquisition opportunities there.
Hi, Hex Forsyth, Moore Security. A couple of questions for me, if I may. First one, on paper, can you just give us an indication of your expectations on return for this year?
Yeah, that's quite interesting. The good news is we were right when we said paper would make no money. And the bad news is we were right, it's making no money. And we've given up trying to predict what happens on paper. The reality is we just want to have a business model that responds. So we want to be short in paper, and we want to be able to change the prices quickly. There's other analysts who follow paper companies, and I'd let them predict that, rather than DS Smith, frankly.
On a more micro, current trading is contribution out of paper.
So current trading on paper?
Yeah.
It's got a little bit better, but it's pretty dire as a comparative. So we're not relying on the surges in paper to achieve our numbers, Hector.
Okay, thanks. Just then, in terms of your outlook statement, you make some references in there to R&D and business development costs. Could you give us a guide as to the percentage of sales that you're spending on R&D and how you think that's going to increase over the course of time, or change at least? And more specifically, you can flesh out those business developments, what that reference really means.
Oh, R&D. Pure research is relatively low. Most of it directly with our customers. So you could be at about 1% there in revenue in terms of R&D, taking all the design and development resource that we have. Business development, well, effectively that's the job of our commercial teams across. That's what we do, that's our business model. So it's quite hard to easily quantify. That's the commercial, the operational, the whole organisation geared up towards that business development side.
So the reference in terms of the outlook statement,
yeah.
You make it specifically there. Why is that reference there?
Because that's where we can see our growth. We're targeted on pan-European accounts. We can see that we're putting in capital investment to support answering the question there about the more complex boxes, making them better with less material. And the other side is the innovation. So we started to roll out some of the DS Smith products, which our customers are asking across some of the operations that they weren't currently supplying. So, you know, a great example would be Arclu. We were supplying it in the UK and France. We had a customer asking for it in Germany. It's now being rolled out across the customer base in Germany. That gives our customers the opportunity for lighter packaging. Obviously, it gives DS Smith the opportunity for lighter packaging and more innovation. So it's a continuation, and that's why we feel that the market may be challenging, but what DS Smith's doing in terms of its R&D on products and its innovation and business development
all underpins the progress we expect to make this year.
Thank you. And the last one is on the exceptional costs. You've outlined that you think, I'm correct, that the cost of delivery synergies has risen from 70 to 90 million euros,
yeah.
which is proportionately more than the increase in the cost savings.
Yeah.
Can you outline why that is and where it's actually going?
I think what you find is when you do an acquisition, you prioritise and you do the fastest and easiest things first, and that's the returns that you get. After there, there's almost a set of diminishing returns. So we see additional cost synergies, which is going to cost more to achieve them. So there's a combination in there. We've done a lot of the work we started to deliver on procurement. Cost has gone in. That should start to come through next year. But some of the efficiency moves that we need to make where there's duplication, that's where you can see additional costs coming in. And it's just prioritising easiest and quickest first, and the harder things, same as the comment about the inventory and the synergies there, it takes harder, it takes longer, and it costs more.
And just at this stage, are they the only exceptional costs that you envisage?
In terms of the current view, that's the exceptional cost we can see at the minute, but you know Hector will react in terms of business performance in specific geographies, sites, etc. If it's not adequate, we'll respond.
Yeah, understood. Okay, thank you very much. Hi, it's Eshin Tirabali from Goldman Sachs. Just three questions for me. So, firstly, in terms of your outlook statement, you did make allusion to input cost pressure. If you can just elaborate on that point, first of all. Secondly, in terms of your free cash generation in the current year, working capital is a very big component of that. So is the 4.5% of sales as far as you can go, or is there further improvement that you can see, and could you give some guidance perhaps related to that? And then thirdly, in terms of the Rock 10 licensing agreement, what's the sort of revenues that you're kind of deriving from that, and what is the opportunity potentially from other similar arrangements? Thanks.
Right. Input costs, so I think, Miles has answered that about different increases, what you quoted there on, so that's what I've read in the papers, etc. That's what we're seeing in terms of the 30, 40 euros. As I said, I can't predict whether it'll go up more than that or if the light will come off. What I do know is we've got a business model that sets out to recover those costs ideally on a 3-month recovery period. With FCA, we're starting at 6 months. There's work to do to reduce that. So we'll react and respond and pass that through as need be.
Okay, so it's a pay for costs as opposed to any other?
Yeah, I would have said if you went back to our April IMS, so in the pre-close, interestingly, energy costs are looking as if they're going to be moving up. I would say as a sit here now, that pressure is greatly reduced. We'll update you on moves in costs as and when they happen. To us, the important thing is we have a business model that can react to those cost moves and recover those cost moves with the usual phasing in terms of timing. On free cash flow, I'd say the 4.5% is pretty good actually. It's about half what quite a few competitors are running at. But a lot of the savings you see coming through there are on payables and receivables. There's some work in terms of slide on inventory, and there is opportunity to do more improvement on inventory, but that's the hard, just some of the comment about the synergies. The inventory is the hardest to get, and that takes the longest. But that is something that I think the working capital account continues to improve by from the inventory.
We're under confidentiality, so we're not, unfortunately, not allowed to individually disclose it as the business builds, and it certainly can do more. But at the moment, we have a contractual obligation. I'm afraid it's not in the current year. It's not clear finally, because it's just starting. But there's a lot of opportunities in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Last question. Yes.
Morning, Chris Dark from Investec. I'll go with the two questions rather than the three. Firstly, around synergy benefits. In the appendix, you've given us a breakdown of kind of how that's coming through. For the year we've gone into, is it going to look broadly similar in makeup percentage-wise? procurement being kind of just over 50% of the benefits?
Yeah, I think that's fair, Chris, in terms of the probably slightly more coming through on procurement, I'd say, and some of the more on the facility cost duplication.
Okay. Second question, kind of going back to working capital. I think in the past you've given us an idea of kind of SDA versus kind of core DF Smith, where those percentages ended the year end. Where was core DF Smith, and where did it end the year? Was it, I assume, somewhere around 3, something like that?
Not too far away, Chris, yeah.
I'll write down 3.
Yeah.
And just finally, given this is your last presentation, I just want to say thanks on behalf of the analysts in the room. You know, you've been very helpful in the last kind of 12, 18 months, and I've got to know the story better, and give us just an awesome day, so I say thank you.
Thank you much, Chris. Thank you.
I think we just have is anybody on the dial-in with any questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Just a reminder, please press star 1 on your keypad to ask a question. There are no questions from the phone lines.
Look, lastly, thank you everybody for coming and listening to us. I'll summarise, we're delivering on our strategy. The year started well in line with expectations, but we really are excited about the future. And if I just extend my thanks to Steve as well over the last 5 years, of which I've only been here 3. Thank you very much indeed, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace your handsets.